Welcome and thank you all for standing by. At this time, I would like to remind parties that your lines are on a listen-only mode until the question-and-answer session. During the question-and-answer session, you may press star 1. Today's call is being recorded. If you have any objections, you may disconnect at this time. I will now turn the meeting over to Glenn Nowoff. Thank you, sir. You may begin.
And thanks to all the folks who have dialed in today to this media availability on CDC's investigation of human cases of swine influenza. I'm Glenn Nowak. I'm Director of Media Relations here at CDC. One of the things I just want to note for people, sometimes people may wonder why we don't start these things at the anointed hour. One of the reasons we don't is that it takes a while to get everybody into the phone queue. And for instance, on this call, as with the last couple of calls, we've had several hundred people dialing in, and so it does take about 10 to 15 minutes, and no matter what time we would set this for, we would be starting about 10 minutes or 15 minutes after that appointed hour as we let everybody dial in. So that's the explanation for why we're sometimes, or why we're often 10 to 15 minutes starting after our announced hour. Today, I have with me Dr. Ann Schuchat, S-C-H-U-C-H-A-T. Dr. Schuchat is the Interim Deputy Director for Science and Public Health Programs here at the Centers for Disease Control and Prevention. And she is joined by Dr. Daniel Jernigan, that's J-E-R-N-I-G-A-N. And Dr. Jernigan is Deputy Director of CDC's Influenza Division. And I will turn it over to Dr. Schuchat for some brief opening remarks, and then we will primarily take questions from the media today. Thank you.
Hello, thank you so much for joining us on this call, and I hope we'll be able to help you with providing information. I'd like to start by confirming our general view of the situation. We are worried, and because we're worried, we're acting aggressively on a number of fronts so that you don't have to worry. Our goal here is to primarily address any new questions that you may have. There is not a lot new since yesterday to report, but I want to go over some of the information from yesterday so that we're on the same page and be available to clarify things. At present, there are still 8 confirmed human cases of swine influenza in the United States, and there is a serious situation in Mexico with severe disease and a number of confirmed swine influenza infections among adults in parts of Mexico. These are very dynamic times, and many things will be changing. And as all of you know from seasonal influenza and from influenza in general, it's very hard to predict exactly the next step. We need to all be prepared for change and be prepared for what we tell you to need to be updated and for some of our interim recommendations to change as we learn new things. We're really committed to share information as we get it and to help you keep the public informed. There are, as you know, a number of state and local investigations that are going on. As we've heightened attention to this concern around the country, the public health and clinical communities have really rallied and are looking into a number of possible issues. We don't have confirmation of new lab-confirmed cases from any of those investigations. We work closely with the state and local health departments, but we really appreciate the hard work they're doing. Typically, they will investigate, use their own state laboratories to evaluate possible cases, and CDC is available for confirming suspected suspicious isolates that they may have. So there'll be lots of changes in reports from community to community, and we'll just need to all stay connected. Today, I can tell you that we have teams that are helping in Southern California and the California Health Department, and we do have CDC experts that have arrived in Mexico to help with that investigation as part of the global community. We're working closely with Mexico and Canada, as well as the World Health Organization and our international partners around the world. At this point, we're really actively looking for new infections in the United States and supporting the state public health system in detection. We've issued some new information, and I encourage everybody to look on our website, information available around infection control, how to help interrupt, how to help protect healthcare workers, or how to handle specimens that are being collected. Our website is www.cdc.gov/swineflu. It's a new site that's easier to navigate for those of you looking yesterday. As we mentioned yesterday, there's an outbreak notice for Mexico. This doesn't mean travel restrictions or that you can't go to Mexico. It's we'd like people who are traveling to Mexico to be aware that there is an outbreak ongoing and that information is changing, and to take the kind of precautions they would take normally. A few other key points. Many of the actions that you see in your communities or that you hear us talking about are really taken in with an abundance of caution. We're trying to take actions early before things get worse, and so you'll see a lot going on, and it may be different in one community than another because circumstances can differ, and sometimes we can actually learn from those differences. So I think just to stay attuned to the likelihood that you won't see exactly the same things unfolding in different places. I do want to stress a couple points. We're very fortunate so far here in the United States. All of the cases that we are aware of that are confirmed to be swine influenza have been mild. Only one of the eight was hospitalized. That can change. That may change. Of course, we are concerned about the situation in Mexico, where much more severe disease has been seen. But so far, we have been quite fortunate. We want you to know that it's time to prepare, it's time to think ahead, and really time to be ready for some uncertainty, and to know that the public health and the clinical communities are working hard on this and working together across country lines. I think that those are probably the key things I want to communicate, because I know you have a lot of specific questions. So I think we can probably go to the line for questions.
Operator, we'll take the first question.
Our first question is from Maggie Fox from Reuters. Your line is open.
Hi, good morning. Thanks very much. I wanted to ask where specifically you are doing some active investigations. There's all sorts of reports of vague, you know, supposed clusters of flu. Can you give us an idea of where there are some specific cases that you're looking at, both in the U.S. and in Mexico?
Yeah, thank you for that question. You know, the way things work for an outbreak in general, including this one, is that state and local public health has the lead on investigating and responding to rumors and concerns and working them up in a typical way, you know, figuring out what the illness is, has there been spread, are there laboratory characteristics that would suggest this is caused by this new virus that we're concerned about. CDC doesn't actually do those investigations. We provide technical assistance, and upon invitation, we may assist. As of now, the California Health Department has asked for our assistance, and we're helping support the county and state health departments in Southern California. Texas has asked for our assistance, and we're working towards that. And the Mexican government has asked WHO for assistance, and we're part of that team. So we don't have the lead in these investigations. We're really part of teams. And what I can say is that routine public health does this kind of thing all the time. Of course, our alert is much higher right now, but when there's a cluster of respiratory illness in a special population, public health will be looking into that. It's really why public health is there to a great extent. And fortunately, the laboratories throughout the country, the public health laboratories, have already been trained specially for unusual kinds of influenza, really based on that bird flu situation, the H5N1 situation. And so we're fortunate now that we do have public health laboratories able to type influenza and recognize that something is new and that it needs to be forwarded on to us. So long answer, but we're not basically in the lead on investigations right now.
Thank you. Next question, operator.
The next question is from Carmen Alvarez, newspaper Excelsior. Your line is open.
Hello, good afternoon. I would like to ask you about two things. In October 20, 2008, there was an information to the Congress of the U.S. about the discovery in 1997 of a virulent H5N1 strain of avian influenza in the U.S. and the need to implement the so-called Stafford Act to face this problem. In the specific case of the work of Mexico and the U.S., a source told me that the next step would be the intervention of the Homeland Security Department to face the crisis. I wonder, what investigations do you have on this H5N1 virulent strain? And two, please, what work would follow with the Homeland Department of Security? And three, what is the update that you have about the teleconference that took place a few minutes ago between Mexico and Switzerland, because we have the presence in Mexico of the director of the World Health Organization, Mr. Margaret Chan, in Mexico City with a mission taking action in Mexico.
Thank you. Let me clarify a few points. The H5N1 influenza virus that you were speaking of, that is, many people call that bird flu. That's the virus that since 1997 has been circulating in some bird populations and in a much smaller number of people, mainly in Asia. And that is not what we're talking about here today in the United States or in Mexico. But because of the H5N1 concern, many increased efforts were made to improve preparedness in the United States as well as around the world. So we're not talking about that particular influenza virus. Here we're talking about a new virus, a human infections with a new swine flu virus. It's a combination of a couple different components of swine, human, and bird influenza. The Department of Homeland Security does get involved when there are major emergencies that cross from health to other sectors of society, and even in routine public health efforts, the Health and Human Services Department or public health often works quite closely with the Department of Homeland Security. So we are working with them in regular contact and phone briefs. In terms of Mexico and the World Health Organization, what I can say is that there's frequent communication right now between leaders in the health communities in Mexico and the U.S. and Canada, and of course at the World Health Organization in Switzerland. And the World Health Organization has some special roles when it comes to public health emergencies and to the question of pandemic influenza. And the WHO has been taking many measures to stay on top of things. Now, when we make ourselves available for press inquiries at a certain time, as I mentioned before, there's a lot of things going on in a lot of places at the same time. So what's going on in Geneva, I'm not prepared to report on, but I can tell you that I know the World Health Organization is in close contact with influenza experts and with leaders in Mexico and elsewhere. So just to say that when I said public health was on alert and engaged, it's not just here in the U.S., it's really all around the world.
Thank you. Operator, we'll take the next question.
The next is from Robert Basel, NBC. Your line is open.
Thank you very much. Two things that, again, this goes to the World Health Organization, and we all realize you don't speak for the World Health Organization, but it's our understanding that there was a decision just now not to go to phase four in this. And how does this not meet the definition of phase four? There's clear human-to-human transmission of a new virus. And the other thing is, and again, it's not your responsibility, but the entire pandemic flu plan for the world called for isolation early on of a new virus, and yet this seems to have gone on in Mexico for at least a month before you guys even knew about it. How did that happen?
Thank you, Robert. I think I'll have Dan Jernigan start to answer that question, and maybe then Ann can offer some additional thoughts. So, Dan?
Right. So I think there are a lot of factors that the folks at the WHO take into account when they are considering the phases. And that activity is ongoing now. There's a committee of individuals that have been selected from various different countries and with different backgrounds that inform the WHO. And so that process is ongoing now. From our understanding, there has not been any change in the phases. And so is your question regarding that process, or can you restate your question?
Well, the question is, why hasn't there been a change in the phase, given that by everything that's written on paper, this is a phase four now?
Well, I think that there's an amount of time that they need to be able to respond to that, the information. They want to look at how efficient the spread is from person to person, and how sustained the transmission is. And I think all of that information is just now being gathered. And so we look to them to take that information and then translate that into changes. But at this point, my understanding is they are still evaluating that information.
And let me just add some comments. You know, I think that it's easy to focus on the World Health Organization process and the phases that WHO might decide upon. But what's really important for people to know is that we are preparing, that we are actively working, and that a change from the WHO perspective, you know, whether they decide to do it or not, doesn't really change our very forward-leaning efforts, you know, here and in Mexico and in other countries. People are actively looking for this virus, and we're making steps to prepare for more serious concerns. We are testing the isolate very carefully and preparing it for vaccine production should that be necessary. So we're really going through the efforts that would be needed. And we're really not trying to focus on the classification. So I think the important thing is changes in the WHO classification will signal a conclusion by an expert committee about how things are and how sure we are that things are at a different point, but that the public health response is quite aggressive right now in case things do continue to evolve in a serious way. So next question.
Question, please.
The next is from Helen Branswell, the Canadian Press. Your line is open.
Hi, I was hoping I could ask a couple of questions, one that sort of follows on Bob Bissell's question just there. You know, it seems clear that public health authorities are taking this very seriously, and people who follow flu are taking it very seriously, but I'm not convinced that it's on the radar of a lot of other people. Dr. Shukat, you said earlier that it's time to prepare. Do you have concerns that message maybe hasn't gotten out just yet? And I'll have a second question if I could ask it.
You know, I thank you for that question. I think that it's always a challenge to get messages out, and one of the values of the media is to help us with our communication. You know, the situation is serious. We at CDC are worried. We're in close contact with very high levels of leadership in the United States, in other countries, and at the World Health Organization. I think the fact that the WHO committee was reviewing this issue suggests that people are taking this extremely seriously. Now, what it means for everyone out there in America is a different story. So I do think we've gotten a message to the leadership that is engaged in the important decision-making that we have a very severe situation going on and that we all need to stay in regular contact. But I think we also need to put this into perspective about people's day-to-day lives. I think that we are succeeding in connecting with the public health and the public health community that this is a serious concern, and they are, you know, I'm sure we've gotten the message out to them in terms of our very regular communications beyond those that go through the media.
Did you have another question?
Sure, what's going on in Mexico and whether, in fact, there is more severe disease there than so far has been evident in the American cases, or if something else is confusing the picture, you know, that there may be adenoviruses or something else, and I'm not suggesting I've heard adenoviruses. I'm wondering if any testing CDC has done or anything you've learned suggests that there is something else out there.
You know, that's a really good question and one that we're all asking here. You know, what we know so far is that severe disease is happening in Mexico, and some cases of severe disease have been confirmed to be caused by a swine influenza virus. We also know that mild disease has been detected in the United States, a very small number, and that that the same virus appears to be causing this mild disease. we're really actively looking for severe disease here in the United States, and we may find some. So far we haven't, but we may find some. In Mexico, they were looking for severe disease, and they found some. They may not have been looking as widely for the milder cases. But with respiratory infections, we're quite challenged because there are many, many different causes of respiratory illness, and they can look just exactly the same. Lots of causes of mild disease, lots of causes of severe disease, lots of viruses and bacteria that can cause those illnesses, and not great tests for all of them. So it can take some time to really put the whole story together. Many people are thinking about why does the pattern look different in the two places. It may look different because we don't have good enough information. It may look different because the virus is different. It may look different because there's some other cofactor or circumstance or environmental issue that's driving a more severe circumstance in one place than elsewhere. But we're really at too early a stage to conclude on that. So what I would say is that's why intensified investigation is going on in Mexico and why the U.S. Public health and clinical community has really raised their alert. We are looking for other pathogens, both in concert with Mexico and here in our cases in the U.S. So I think we're mindful to the idea that sometimes infectious diseases don't behave the way we think they're going to, and influenza is notorious for that.
Thank you. Next question, operator.
The next is from Betsy McKinney, Wall Street Journal. Your line is open.
Hi. Thanks very much. I wanted to ask a question related to WHO's communique from yesterday. They mentioned that the U.S., in addition to the confirmed cases, is investigating 9 suspect cases. I wondered if you could give us any more information on these cases, and maybe as part of that, more broadly, can you tell us, you know, given what you know about this virus and where it has been identified and its geographical diversity, how widely could it already have spread in terms of, you know, around the U.S. and in other countries?
Yeah, thanks for those questions. We have a number of active, the public health community has a number of active investigations of suspect illness going on. You know, the state and local health departments, in conjunction with the clinical community, will be looking at people who have respiratory illness, who travel to Mexico, or who have respiratory illness that's suspicious, and who have exposure to someone with a lab-confirmed case of swine flu or somebody who's been in one of these communities. So there's quite a lot going on, and it takes some time for those cases to work through the system to figure out what whether they will turn out to be confirmed or turn out to be something else. So I would say that it's really impossible to give a static figure for how many cases are under investigation, and that's why we're really focusing on the confirmed cases. But you asked a question about how widespread might this be, and you know, we do have important information already about that. With definite lab-confirmed cases in Southern California, in Texas, and in a couple different parts of Mexico, it's clear that this is widespread. And that is one reason why we have let you know that we do not think we can contain the spread of this virus. If we found only swine flu and a new influenza virus in one place in a small community, we might be able to quench or contain it. But with spread in, with infections in many different communities, as we're seeing, we don't think that containment is feasible. On the other hand, that's not surprising given what we know about seasonal influenza that really goes through many communities around the U.S. So containment would be fantastic, but we think there are many, many tools in our toolbox to reduce the illness and the suffering that this virus is causing and reduce transmission, even if we're not in a circumstance where we can contain it. So I think it's important to know that we do think that this, that having found virus where we found it, we are likely to find it in many other places, and we are hopeful that so far our cases in the U.S. have been mild, and we are quite mindful that the situation in Mexico appears to be much different. So we're really trying to prepare for those different contingencies. But we do think that we're not at a point where we can keep this virus in just one place.
Thank you. Operator, next question.
The next is from Keith Darst, San Diego Union Tribune. Your line is open.
Yes, thanks for doing this call. There have been mentions of two things I'd like to ask about. First off, there was mentioned 2 days ago that one of the patients here in San Diego County may have traveled to Mexico prior to being sick. I'm wondering if you can provide any information or details about when that travel occurred and which patient that is in terms of age and gender. Secondly, there also have been reports of possible cases being identified in Mexicali, which is a community just across the border from San Diego County. Could you also comment on that? What sorts of cases have been identified in that area?
Yeah, you know, I think that the San Diego County Health Department will be your best source on the specifics of the situation. As I understand it, the travel was rather remote. But as Dr. Bester mentioned yesterday, if we honed in on people who had traveled to Mexico and who live in San Diego, it's almost everybody in San Diego that's traveling to Mexico at one point or another. The other issue of Mexicali, I just want to say that there is a border infectious disease surveillance system that's a collaboration between the U.S. and Mexican governments and the states along the border. And it's in that system that we've been looking at people with febrile respiratory illness and testing for flu. So we have more regular seasonal influenza, and then, of course, we did, as we mentioned, detect, I think, we've actually detected two confirmed cases through that border infectious disease surveillance system, so that we're looking more actively in that area. In terms of Mexico in general, though, I would say that efforts are really just getting organized through the Mexican public health authorities to really implement a broader surveillance system. They're doing quite a bit in a very intense period. So as I mentioned a couple of days ago, some of what we're finding is really the result of where we've been looking. And now that we're looking more widely, I expect us to find more throughout the country. So I think the key point there is that based on what we know so far, we do expect more cases, and we expect them to occur in other communities.
Operator, next question.
The next is from Shireen Abedin from CNN. Your line is open.
Yes, thank you. Any thoughts on why this seems to be more virulent in Mexico than in the U.S.? For example, is it a matter of increased flu shot protection, or is it about the age of the victims, or is there perhaps a second virus there? And my second question is, has President Obama been briefed on the current situation as far as you all are aware? And then I'd also like to ask you if you could kind of put the transmissibility of this flu into perspective. Are we talking about something that is just like regular flu? Can you get it from a bus? Can you get it from your waiter? Or do you know yet?
Thanks for those questions. I'm going to handle them. The question about why the virus appears to be more virulent in Mexico is one that we are looking intensively into. And rather than speculate about reasons, I think it's really going to be important for the science to lead us on this. So there'll be some careful evaluations going on to explore a number of hypotheses, and I hope we'll find out the answer to that with better information and with careful evaluation. You asked about the transmissibility. That's a key thing that we are looking at as part of the routine public health evaluations that are going on, trying to understand when someone is ill with this, how does it spread? You know, how many people might they infect? Remember with the SARS situation, we had a circumstance where certain people were able to infect a lot of other people, and some people really didn't transmit too much. Influenza in generally is quite transmissible, and we are looking in more detail, public health is looking in more detail to understand the transmission properties of this particular virus. In terms of leadership briefings, I can tell you that public health is working both with the federal, state, and local levels and across different sectors beyond our public health zone in terms of making sure that leadership is appropriately informed. So I think that we certainly are working across the Department of the Health and Human Services and working with our state and local partners, and I think that leadership is highly engaged. So next question, please.
The next is from Katie Beck, BBC. Your line is open.
Hi, thanks. I was wondering if you have any more information on the situation at the St. Francis Preparatory School in Queens, New York, where 25 students reported flu-like symptoms on Thursday and the New York Health Department was investigating?
Yeah, thank you for that question. New York City has a fantastic health department, and they are actively investigating in that school. And I really defer to the health department to share their the findings of their investigation. I can say that we are in close communication with the New York City Health Department, and they are doing, you know, as usual, a fantastic job. Next question.
Joanne Silberner, NPR, your line is open.
Yes, thanks. You mentioned that you're working on isolates for possible vaccine manufacturers. Can you tell us how long it would take to get any appreciable amounts of vaccine?
You know, the vaccine production process is quite complex and has many steps, and we are taking the initial steps in terms of preparing the seed virus to hand off to the industry partners who produce large quantities. You know, it does take months to produce a vaccine, and it's a very important step to take. You know, the quality control measures and the preparation to gather the right virus isolates and prepare them through the quality control measures so that industry can scale up. It's a many-month process, and one that, of course, we, when we find a new virus like this, we prepare vaccine candidates. It's a question of readiness, working closely with the FDA and with industry. Manufacturing capacity is at an all-time high right now because of the investments that the government has made over the past several years. As you know, with the seasonal influenza, we've been getting more and more vaccine available, and really there have been tremendous efforts to prepare both the regulatory, production, and scientific communities so that we would be able to scale up more rapidly than we used to. You know, there's a lot of progress on that front. Even with all that progress, we're not going to have large amounts of vaccine tomorrow, but we're taking that very aggressive, forward-leaning posture to make sure that we can produce a vaccine from this new virus if necessary. Next question.
The next is from David Brown, Washington Post. Your line is open.
Yeah, thank you very much. There's some basic facts here that have been very hard to get, and perhaps the most important is the epidemic curve in Mexico. Is that is the outbreak there ongoing, or is it over and they're simply counting up the cases? If it is ongoing, are the number of cases being is it a rising curve? Is it a falling curve? When is the last onset of a fatal illness? Or do you not know the answer to these questions?
Yeah, thanks. Those are really important questions. I would like to start by saying that I do not know the answer to those questions and give you some understanding of why, even with teams and people working actively in Mexico, it may take some time to get those questions. The syndrome that we're hearing about in Mexico is relatively non-specific or general, severe pneumonia. There's a lot of severe pneumonia that happens all the time, separate from an influenza, a new influenza virus. And so the ability to link viral testing, sorry about that, you guys? Okay. The ability to link viral testing with a clinical syndrome is necessary to really tease out what is the background, what are the trends in respiratory illness, pneumonia, or influenza-like illness with what is new here. So even if we do have many new virus-associated respiratory illnesses, they'll be occurring on a backdrop of other concern, of other routine or baseline respiratory infections. Here in the U.S., we've been looking at our syndromic surveillance systems, really trying to figure out whether we're seeing any blips in this background. We haven't seen any such increases yet, but we're looking carefully at that. But I would say that it's going to take some time for the epidemiologic investigation in Mexico to tell us whether things are escalating or over. I would say that we are operating under the assumption that there are ongoing concerns, that there are new infections that are worrisome, and I think that it would be wonderful if that's not the case, but that's really, I think, what we should be assuming at this point.
Thank you. Next question, operator.
The next is from Mike Stobie, Associated Press. Your line is open.
Hi, thanks for taking the question. First of all, I have two questions. The first one, I was looking for an update on lab analysis that CDC had done. Yesterday, you all had said 14 samples tested from Mexico, 7 positive. Is that still the count? And of those that have been positive, were any of those deaths? Also, part two of that question is, you were looking at contact family members of the 8 people in the U.S. Have some of those tests come back negative then?
At this point, the only laboratory positives that we have from Mexico are those that we announced yesterday. The positives do include severe or fatal cases from Mexico. We continue to be doing investigations of contacts. We haven't identified additional laboratory positives from those. There are many investigations ongoing in our laboratory, and we are prioritizing the testing that we do. So even I would say that you may not assume, based on us not having results, that we're basically working actively, testing quite a bit, and prioritizing the testing that will really change our planning for the most urgent assessments. We have continued to look at the viral characteristics, and based on what we have tested so far in terms of the genetic evaluation or antigenic evaluation, the strains from Mexico and the United States are the same, essentially, but there are additional ways to look at the viruses that are not completed. So there's really, I would say, frankly, there's a phenomenal amount of first-rate laboratory testing and studies going on to really help us understand the situation.
And this is Glenn. I think just to clarify a little bit, because I think it may be helpful that reporters understand this, much, if not all, of that first-line testing is actually happening in state and local state labs.
Yeah, let me clarify. Thank you, Glenn. What the routine is that a person who is being evaluated for influenza will get a test carried out to their doctor or their healthcare setting. Often in a clinic or a hospital, a test can be carried out that can tell you rapidly whether this is flu or not, and can tell you A or B or negative. Test isolates can get forwarded to the public health lab, where they can do more because we have provided them kits of training in order to do more, and they can differentiate this new H5N1 bird flu virus that we've been talking about in Asia. They can look at the seasonal influenza strain, and they can basically tell us that something is untypeable with the test kits that they have. It's those untypeable strains that are influenza A but untypeable that we're concerned about, and those are ones that get forwarded here. Many times when we get an untypeable strain from a state health lab, it turns out to be typeable in our experience. Sometimes we find something new, and that's what happened with these swine flu cases. And so the laboratories, the public health laboratories, are testing a lot more right now because we don't test every single person with suspected influenza for any virus. But now that they are getting more tests, they're running them, and when they find the untypeables, they're forwarding them on to us for confirmation. There are a few of the laboratories that can do a little bit more themselves, but again, often CDC is the confirmatory lab. So this is really a partnership. A lots of work happening in the state public health infrastructure right now, and some of the bigger city public health infrastructure. So next question.
The next is from John Cohen, Science Mag. Your line is open.
Hi, thanks for taking my question. On the same theme, I wanted to return to something that Bob Bazell asked and get some more detail about the actual testing. Bob had asked why did you wait until cases in the U.S. surfaced to ask Mexico for samples? And then following up on that, the test that you do at CDC, as I understand it, depends on reagents that other people don't have. What are those reagents, and why aren't they distributed widely to Mexico and to state health departments and county health departments?
You know, we the CDC influenza laboratory is an international, it's a WHO collaborating center. It's one of 4 around the world, and we routinely receive specimens from many countries, including Mexico. So we get specimens from Mexico all the time. We didn't wait until we had a problem in the U.S. to ask Mexico to share isolates with us. They share isolates routinely with us. The second question was about reagents. When you have a new virus, which is what we have here to the best of our understanding, reagents don't exist, and so they need to be prepared based on the new virus. CDC has been preparing reagents based on this virus and its characteristics, and that those reagents can then be shared with state health departments. There are some very technical things that make it difficult to share reagents. I'm not sure if your question wanted to get into that or if it was just the reason of, like, why were we waiting till now. What I can say is that we'd already shared the reagents that the public health system needed based on an FDA approval of a new kit. And I think I'll let Dr. Jernigan give you a little bit more details about the reagent situation.
Yeah, the CDC actually creates develops the reagents that are sent out to the national influenza centers around the world to help characterize the seasonal viruses that circulate each year. Those are kits that we put together and send without cost to those laboratories. We also make other kinds of kits that are for the PCR test, which I think is what you're talking about. It's a more complicated test to help detect the subtypes of influenza. And those kits we also send out around the world and also to about 140 laboratories in the United States. Once we identified this new swine, H1N1, we actually fixed our primers so that they fixed our test, that is, so that it would better detect it. And we are now having those reagents made, and we will send those out to the 140 participating laboratories. We will also make the sequence of those viruses, sort of, if you want to think of the recipe of how to make it, we'll make that available to laboratories so that they can make these reagents themselves. And so if there is any appearance that things are not available to people, I think it's mainly because it is a new virus. We are making the reagents for it, and it's just a matter of time for us to get them out. But we anticipate that to be very soon, that those reagents will be available.
Operator, we have time for two more questions.
Thank you. The next is from Mary Brophy Marcus. You're from USA Today. Your line is open.
Thank you. I'm sorry, I'm in a loud place right now. I hope you can hear me. As of today, you've confirmed 8 cases in the U.S., and I'm just wondering if you can tell us how many specimens are awaiting influenza typing, looking for this particular new strain at CDC labs right now.
No, I can't give you that number. Sorry. There, you know, we receive specimens all the time in large numbers, and have gotten, we have quite a few specimens that we're looking into. Some of them just as background seasonal flu, and some of them for other purposes. So those numbers aren't really available. I'm sorry.
Next question.
The next is from Elizabeth Cohen, CNN Television. Your line is open. Go ahead. Elizabeth Cohen, CNN Television, please unmute your phone. The next is from Janelle Alicia, MSNBC. Your line is open.
Hi, thanks very much for taking my question. I'm following up on what a couple other people have said just to make sure I'm not missing the detail here. I understand that CDC has to be invited to help communities, but I'm wondering about the communities where you are watching very closely, possibly expecting an invitation to help. If you can give us an idea of possibly how many communities or specifically what those communities are in the U.S.
Thanks. I'd actually like to give you a bigger picture of our response efforts. In this type of likely multi-state scenario, we work in a supportive role, helping provide guidance to all states and communities with regular phone calls and issuance of materials and directives. And the states and locals will be doing these active investigations. So I think this is probably, as we go forward over the next days or even weeks, I think it's not going to be really a question of, well, where is the CDC? I think this is a question of where is the country and the world, and we'll be trying to gather that information and synthesize it. So we in our planning efforts, we really imagined the important questions need to be answered early in the evolution of a new virus. And we know that Mexico is planning to look into questions carefully, and that some of the other, you know, Texas and Southern California, for instance, would be looking very carefully. But I wouldn't say that we're expecting every community that has an issue to have a CDC team on the ground or us to be working on it. And, you know, the other thing to let you know is that questions are going to change. We're at a stage here where we have some really important questions to figure out on how transmissible is this virus, how severe is it, what ways is it being transmitted, what seems to be effective in reducing the transmission and in improving the outcomes in illness. You know, keeping an eye on the resistance pattern. So far, it is a sensitive virus for oseltamivir and zanamivir. These are the kind of questions we're looking at now. So if things get worse, we'll be looking at different questions later, and many of these issues are not ones where a CDC field team is the essential factor. The other thing I'd like to say is that public health and the clinical and academic communities are really working together on this, and that many important findings may come from other sectors, not from CDC.
Thank you. Just a couple things for the participants. There is going to be a 3 p.m. press briefing by Dr. Thomas Frieden, the New York City Department of Health, and so those who are interested in that, I have seen the press media advisory, so if you don't have it, you may want to call the New York City Department of Health Public Affairs Office for that. It's at 3 o'clock Eastern Time. And we expect we'll be doing another press briefing from CDC, a similar briefing to today, probably sometime early tomorrow afternoon. So thank you, and look forward to talking with you soon. And that concludes today's press briefing.